The following paid commercial program was furnished by the program sponsor. The WYSL stations present an hour of truth for the battered but proud people of the Empire State. From the financial and entertainment epicenter of New York City to the sleeping and empty small cities and towns of upstate, which once bustled with manufacturing, mining, and farming. We all know from inspiration, history, and nature, we deserve a return to the success and growth of generations past, a birthright being squandered by corruption in Albany, and the depredations of an insecure, scheming mountebank posing as governor, who loathes both us and himself. As liberty beckoned to enslaved peoples behind the Iron Curtain via American broadcasts after World War II, we now say, believe, rise, and join us. Welcome to Radio Free New York. And here's your host, Andrew Hollister.
Hey guys, how's it going? Thanks for joining us again this week. Last week was our first episode. Today is the second. Just to give you a little recap of the last show, we talked a little bit about who I am, trying to introduce myself to you guys as the listeners. We also talked about right to dry, which is interesting. People fighting for their rights to dry their clothes and clotheslines outside of their home.
This is what it's come to, ladies and gentlemen.
We talked about Cuomo saying America was never great. And I know some of you have maybe seen he's backpedaled on that pretty hard, saying, oh, no, you know, that's not really what I meant.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, everybody knew that's what he meant. He absolutely meant that. And then we talked about the walkaway movement and how that applies to New York State for both Democrats and Republicans. So I'm going to start the show off just telling you guys a little bit more about myself once again, so you guys get to know me, who I am, where I've come from, so you guys can understand that. And then I'll do that for probably another episode or two. And then by then, hopefully you guys got a pretty good solid idea of who I am. So last time I just gave you a general outline of my life. This time I'm going to talk a little bit about my teenage years. You know, growing up, I spent a lot of time with my grandfather. He was a World War II veteran in the Air Force. He was a tail gunner and a bomber. But he really never talked about the war much. That was one of those things. And the more people I meet who are still alive, who are World War II vets, their families say the same thing.
Yeah, it's very typical. They almost to a man, what you'll get is, and they were mostly men then, you'll get, well, you know, that's ancient history. There's no reason to drag that up again. We were just doing a job. Yeah. We did our job. We came home.
Yep. So he was a farmer at first. Then he was a military man and ended up being a Kodak guy. Worked for Kodak all the way through till retirement. And that's when I spent a lot of time with him. And he taught me, you know, a lot of things. I think it might have been both the farmer in him and the military man in him. Just about respect, hard work, being outdoors, you know, and a lot of things like that. And that really stuck with me all the way through, you know, all the way through till him passing, actually, which was pretty difficult for me and the family, to be honest. He was definitely a role model for me.
How long ago was that?
That was in high school for me. So about
your formative years.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was about 16 years old when it happened, just kind of figuring out what it would mean for me to become a man. And so that was difficult. But the values that he taught me then and the things that he talked about then really stood with me and have stuck with me my whole entire life. So I went on the next few years of being a teenager and graduated from Wilson Magnet, which back in the day was the old West High on Genesee Street. I was in the IB program. I was going through that, doing everything. I was actually working multiple jobs throughout high school as well. You know, we grew up in the city. Our family wasn't well off. But I had that ambition. I had that hunger for hard work. And so I worked quite a bit throughout high school. And when I graduated from high school, I did two things. One, I actually started my company. And the other is I went to RIT.
So right out of school.
Yep. 18 years old. That's when I started Simple Tech. We exist today. We're doing really well. We've got multiple employees. We hire all local. We don't outsource a single thing. Even when we go to purchase software from companies, we pull them through the ringer to see, are they going to support local or at least within jobs within our borders? So that's an accomplishment that is a big deal to me. I was a student at RIT. I'm actually a dropout. That's what I became after about a year. You know, I mentioned my family, you know, we weren't really well off. I was paying for school myself out of pocket, working real hard to do that. And the education couldn't keep up with what I was doing in the field. So for those of you who don't know, I do IT, and we do what we would call like bleeding edge technology, which means it's not cutting edge, it's bleeding edge, because it's so new, you cut yourself. And sometimes it hurts. So
I frequently get hurt by my computer.
Yeah. And this is, you know, pain in a different way. It's pain in like, you know, hours and hours from midnight to 3 a.m. But the education just couldn't keep up with it. So I actually left RIT after about a year and a semester there, built my business full time. And we opened our first location in Greece on Elm Grove Road, hired our first employee, you know, off to the races. Very, very exciting time in my life. And shortly after that, I actually purchased my first home. I was 21 years old. And that is, you know, that felt like a really big accomplishment because...
I'm thinking it was.
Yeah. I mean, that was an amazing, amazing feeling, you know, just... starting a successful business at 18, then moving on to purchasing my first home at 21, when most of my friends weren't even thinking about graduating from college yet, and they had, you know, tremendous amount of debt from college, and my debt was being used by me living under a roof. So that's a little bit about me, just to kind of give you guys, those were my teenage years all the way up through 21 there.
Back to Simple Tech real quick. Sure. I don't want to slow you down here, but how many people do you have working for you now?
Six of us full time. So we're a very diverse bunch of people from all over. We have a great time.
But locally diverse.
Yes, locally diverse. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, a good number of the employees live in the city of Rochester. So not just from the county. We do have people from the county and the suburbs too.
And you do too.
Yes, I live in the city too. Yep, I live in Charlotte right now, so still within the city borders, and a little bit quieter than my last neighborhood. So, yeah. So that's it for me. I was going to then segue into talking about more of our freedoms that we lack here in New York,
because somewhere in this process, from you know graduating from the old West High School, starting your first business, buying your first house. Your business at 18, buying your first house at 21, somehow politics entered the picture.
It did. Absolutely. And I will probably in the next episode tell you guys how I got there. But interestingly enough, something that is sometimes brought up and I don't necessarily think about all the time is people will say, wow, you look really young. And, you know, I don't really think about that often. And it's true. I'm 29 years old. I'm actually the youngest that you could be running for this office because by New York State law, you have to be 30 to take the position. Well, I turned 30 on December 27th. So just in time for inauguration.
Cutting it a little close. But...
Yep. And that was actually a concern going into the campaign, whether or not New York State law would allow for that or not, allow for me to take office. So when we come back from the break, I am going to talk about... Cato ranking New York State absolute last in freedom.
Yeah, and it's been there for quite a while, too. And you'll hear about it here on Radio Free New York on WISL 92.1 FM, 1040 AM, coming soon, WISL FM 95.5 West.
Mom leave the stove on again? Dad forget to take his pills? The senior citizen in your life deserves to be treated like family in every way. And you deserve the peace of mind that comes from knowing your older family member is getting personalized care, even though they're not yet ready for a nursing home. Consider Alpine Manor, founded in 1971 by owner Tim Kinsella, and just 20 minutes from Rochester in Lima, Livingston County. At Alpine Manor, there are supervised activities and medications, full laundry and housekeeping. housekeeping services provided to your loved one in immaculate surroundings. You could qualify for $1,830 per month VA benefits or $1,176 per month for a surviving spouse. Ask about our summer sale. After the first month is paid, the second month is free. Alpine Manor, New York State Health Department licensed. Call 346-5880. That's 346-5880 for a no-obligation tour or information. Or visit alpinemanor.com.
If you're looking to market and grow your business, make new business connections, and give back to the community in a meaningful way, consider joining the Greece Regional Chamber of Commerce. We're the largest suburban chamber in Monroe County, and we offer networking, education, marketing, insurance, and advocacy. You do not need to live or work in Greece to join. Our members come from throughout the region. In short, we're better together, and together, we're moving business forward. Visit GreeceChamber.org or call 585-227-7272 to join today.
You're listening to Radio Free New York on the WYSL stations.
All right, guys, thanks for joining us. You're listening to Andrew Hollister, candidate for lieutenant governor on the Libertarian ticket with Larry Sharp. And we've got Bob Savage here with us, too.
Hello, folks. Thanks so much for joining us. A great new show. Don't forget that if you missed the broadcast, the podcast is always available at WYSL1040.com. And we're just really honored to have, a potential future lieutenant governor here on the air. We had an assemblyman, the late Bill Nojay, God rest his soul, was with us for 10 years on the station. So politics is kind of coursing through our transmission lines here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad to be here and glad to that you guys have me. So as we alluded to before the break here, New York State has been ranked 50th for freedom by Cato. Yay, we beat California.
Yeah, the Cato Institute, it's a conservative think tank, but it's also a common sense one. It's not some agenda-driven thing. And there's a lot of metrics here.
Yeah, absolutely. So what they base this on, and this isn't the first time we've been ranked last for freedom. In fact,
it's been years.
So they base the ratings on personal and economic freedoms. So things like what you can do with your property, your home, and also what you can do as a business, what type of regulations there are, taxes, burdens, like all of that. And the findings that they had were just awful and really, really painful. They actually updated it just a couple days ago, and it was just, you really see how New York State crushes small businesses and crushes the average individual in New York State. So our local tax burden is two times more than most of the other states in the union. Double, 200%. That's what we're paying in taxes compared to other people. Our government officials get paid significantly more in New York. Now, they did they did mention one thing as kind of like a positive thing, I guess. And they were like, well, New York actually has less government officials than other states. But
that's true, but we pay them more. There's another way of looking at this, and that is we're getting even less for our money. Fewer bureaucrats, but they make more.
Yeah.
Just to put this in perspective, by the way, state legislators, now they got their raise. Didn't they get a raise to 112 or whatever it was?
I bet they voted yes on that.
I think
one.
They voted themselves a big raise. Sure. It was like, I don't know, 80,000 or 87,000. And then if you had what was called a Lulu, which is you've got a committee appointment, then you could make up into six figures. Now, just to put this in perspective, the legislators in the state of Texas, which meet, I think, every 2 years. They're not even in session all the time. They meet every couple years, and they're paid $7,200. And in New Mexico, it's a volunteer position, meaning you get paid zero.
Mm. So being a public servant, you mean?
Yeah. Not a career, servant.
Yep. Yeah, it always angers me. When people talk about career politicians and you see how people have made a career about it. And it's interesting because sometimes when I meet with people, they say, when you move on from this, whether you win or not, what's the next step in your career in politics? And I always look at them and say, well, this isn't my career. I don't intend it to be. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, I run a small business. I actually do what I love to do. I'm doing this because I'm upset with where New York State is. I'm planning to raise a family. I don't want to be pushed out of the state. I'm not doing this for this idea of, oh, I'll get this job, maybe I'll move up, maybe I'll make another run in 6-8 years or something like that. No, this politics and being a political servant was never meant to be a career. It wasn't. The intention was for normal everyday people like you and I to represent our community, our friends and our neighbors, to have good governance, which means small government, minimal taxes, efficient government, not bloated government with ginormous salaries and taxes. They're 200% more than the majority of the states in the union. So I thought that was pretty interesting. There's some other stats that they published, which were just, par for the course for New York State. One of those is that debt in New York is the highest in the nation. So personal debt. So people like you, people like me who have debt, we have the highest ratio of debt to income in the nation. 32.1% of the average New Yorker's income has already been spoken for with personal debt. So highest in the nation, really makes it difficult to do things in your life if debt is what's controlling you. Our land use freedoms are extremely low. But ironically, there's one thing on the list that is more free than average in the United States, and that is the freedom to gamble.
Great. That's something to make you kind of quietly proud.
Yep. So there we go. We won.
Could be related to that debt issue, too, you just mentioned.
Could be. So we win in one instance where most people aren't proud of, and we lose just about everywhere else. So that's what Cato had to say about New York. And on the topic of lack of freedom in New York and overburdening regulations, I found another law for you guys. This time, not about hanging your clothes outside to dry. This law is specific to New York City. And you got to wonder who actually wrote this law and who put this into effect. But in New York City, it is illegal to have a puppet show in your window.
So, okay.
Yep. So maybe not what you're expecting.
What about the puppet show in the assembly? Oh, did I say that in my out loud voice?
Well, you know, as long as they keep the window shut and nobody sees it, I guess that one's okay.
Please. What, are you kidding me? Politicians keep their window shut, keep their mouth shut? Not bloody likely.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. So
we got, I think, about 140 puppets that...
There's quite a few here in New York. So that was pretty interesting. I'm just going to read to you guys the text here in this law because it's still on the books. I've got the city code pulled up and everything.
Date to 1920 or something?
You know, I was trying to find the date on it. I mean, this is published in 2017, but I don't see the actual date. So, and it actually says it can be used criminally as well, which is really interesting. But it starts off with, it shall be unlawful to give any exhibition of climbing or scaling on the front or exterior of any house or building. Okay, maybe this sounds like a safety issue.
Yeah, then, safety last, Harold Lloyd. Harold Lloyd, if you're still alive, that would be bad news for you.
Yep. But then it goes on to part B where it says, it shall likewise be unlawful for any person from any window or open space of any house or building to exhibit to the public upon the street or sidewalk thereof any performance of puppet or other figures, ballet or other dancing, comedy, farce, show with moving figures, play or other entertainment. So
what could possibly have been the reason for that?
So you can't dance ballet in front of your window or on the sidewalk. No comedy, no puppets. And there is a fine. The fine cannot be more than $25, but you can also be imprisoned for 30 days.
Yeah, the fine kind of gives it away as being a really antique law, kind of similar to the one that's still on the books in Philadelphia, where it's illegal to operate a motor vehicle within the city limits of Philadelphia unless somebody proceeds in front of you with a lantern and a bell to warn off approaching horses so that you don't alarm horses.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting to me because we talk about how complicated the laws are here and how ridiculous it is. There's literally a law for just about anything in New York. And if somebody wants to get you on something, there's something there.
There's a book. Did Dershowitz write this one? Is it 3 felonies a day?
So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't surprise me.
I'll look
at
it up real quick. I think it might have been Alan Dershowitz, the Harvard law professor.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you are. In New York State, you cannot have, or New York City, you cannot display puppets or dance ballet from your open window. You can go to jail for 30 days on that. So speaking of lack of liberty, something else came out, which normally I don't speak about federal issues. Typically, I stay away from that. I essentially have a policy of I'll speak about a federal issue when it's going to impact New York State. And I think we actually have one here worth talking about because it can impact New York State. And I do want to talk about a little bit on a local level what that could maybe look like.
Real quick before you get to that, the book is 3 Felonies a Day, How the Feds Target the Innocent. Is actually by a guy, Harvey Silvergate.
There you
go.
I don't
know why I thought Dershowitz did it, but Harvey Silvergate.
Harvey Silvergate. I'll have to check that out. You guys check it out, too. I bet you there's a lot of stuff from New York State.
The average professional in this country wakes up in the morning, goes to work, comes home, eats dinner, then goes to sleep unaware that he or she has likely committed several federal crimes that day. And it should be noted here, by the way, too, when we're talking about this, that when the country started, there were only 3 federal crimes. I think one was murder. I think one was treason. I can't remember the other one.
Maybe theft, something like that.
I don't know. I think they left that pretty much to the states.
That one out.
It
okay.
had something to do with, I don't know. But, yeah, 3 federal crimes. I believe there's 6,000 now.
Yeah, I mean, that almost like 6,000 even sounds low. It probably is 6,000, but, you know.
Well, federal crimes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
but we're not talking about the administrative state here. We're just talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So, for speaking of federal, you know. Federal money to arm schools is basically what broke the news yesterday. I'm not sure if anybody spoke about that before me on the station, but there's this big thing going on right now about federal government possibly, hasn't been confirmed yet, allowing federal grant money for education to be used to arm teachers at schools or staff at schools. This hasn't happened before, although the Trump administration did kind of allude to it back in February. But as kind of a general rule, there hasn't like any federal grant or monies specifically says it can't be used for purchase of weapons and like that sort of thing.
So like for training or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So what's going on right now is people talking about Betsy DeVos possibly allowing this next bit of funding or having the ability to, based on the new language, to actually arm teachers in schools. And the reason I want to talk about this, I don't want to talk about it so much because it's a federal thing, but what I want to talk about is this is a topic that comes up all the time when I speak to people who have school-aged children.
Well, here in the metro, we've got the Hilton is voting for this. At least it's being considered. There have been 2 parental meetings with school officials in Hilton this month. So it's under serious consideration.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually spoke with a parent of one of the students, and I think they might have even been in the Hilton School District. I'm not sure. Either Hilton or Fairport. And he was telling me about all the money that the school is currently spending on special film over the glass, on just various different things for protection from school shooters. And this parent's concern was what was really twofold. You know, he talked about how they're putting these a lot of spending into things that basically have no impact. So when we come back from the break, I'll tell you a little bit about what New York is saying about this and then what I think we could actually do to make schools safer.
Ways for you to take back New York State and reclaim the freedoms that have been wrested from you by the self-interested, self-loathing politicians in Albany. Radio Free New York on the WYSL stations with your host, Andrew Hollister, will return.
the voice of Liberty.
WYSL.
You're listening to WYSL1040.com, 92.1 FM and 1040 AM WYSL Avon Rochester.
There's a place in the village of Avon you and your critters will love. Whether they're big or small, whether they've got hair, fur, or feathers, Avon Feed fits every need. There's a full selection of pet foods for dogs and cats, bird feeders, suet, and all kinds of quality wild bird seed. Check out our frequent flyer bird seed program. Buy 10 bags of bird seed, get the next bag free. Choose farm feeds and great equine products like Blue Seal and Neutrina. Find everything for your pet from feeding bowls to toys, leads, collars, beds, crates, and tie-outs. Avon Feed and Supply has what the big pet chain stores will never have. Tim Cole and his great knowledgeable staff. And if you think you'll save money at that pet superstore, well, think again. While you're at Avon Feed, don't forget the two-legged pets with River Rat Thousand Island cheese and great flavors, including hard-to-find mean and nasty, plus once again nut butters, Nunday mustards, and Rickles pickles. Open weekdays 9 to 6, Saturday 9 to 4. Avon Feed and Supply, West Main at the bottom of the hill, just west of the Circle.
Seaplanes and Cars, take over Hammond Sports. Our annual Wings and Wheels event gets bigger and better every year. Amazing seaplanes and Hammond Sports' greatest classic and exotic car show. Scenic seaplane rides, food vendors, restaurants, breweries, and wine bars. It's all here in the cool little town of Hammond Sports, birthplace of Glenn H. Curtis and Naval Aviation. September 15th and 16th. History, excitement, and fun for the entire family. More info at wingsandwheelshammondsports.com.
Shopping for a new home? Found the right mortgage company? Found the best realtor? Have you even found the attorney to watch out for you? Don't forget about finding a trusted insurance agent. Call someone who cares about protecting you and your investment, David Gagne. Did you know you could save hundreds of dollars by switching to Liberty Mutual Insurance? Find out how by calling David Gagne, your local Liberty Mutual agent. Call Dave at 585-512-2576. That's 585-512-2576. This message brought to you by Liberty Mutual Insurance. Savings may vary.
Take it, Tony.
How's that, Pete?
Terrific, man. Hold on. Hello.
Honey, we need help. The house is like an oven.
Oh, man, now I really got the blues.
What's the skinny, Pete?
AC's down and the house is hot. What am I going to do, brother?
Call Taylor, 500 Help. Their air conditioning experts will fix things up and have you singing in no time.
500 Help? Now that's a cool number.
I think I'm really getting it, man.
Call Taylor, 500 Help.
You're listening to Radio Free New York
on the WYSL stations.
We're not going to make America great again. It was never that great.
I just want to make sure nobody forgets that little quote from Governor Headcase.
Yeah. You know, every time I hear that, the thing I hear loudest is actually the reaction afterwards.
And this was no audience of conservatives who are reacting, recoiling in horror. This was a hand-picked crowd of liberals and left-wing acolytes of Andrew Cuomo. And they were you could hear it's palpable horror or shock. It's just like they didn't have a time to even think about it. It was just like that's...
They were mortified.
Yeah. And who wouldn't be? And that's why we're not going to... We just want to make sure that nobody ever forgets that Andrew Cuomo said those words.
Yeah. I just, you know, and it really speaks to how he truly believes that people will follow him no matter what.
I he's been blatantly pandering to the left, yeah. Trying to do everything he possibly can to out-liberal Cynthia Nixon, and good luck with that, because she's basically a communist loon. But he just went over the line, you know. It's kind of like what happens to us in radio. You know, if you're a member of a controversial morning show, what happens is management is always telling you, hey, we want controversy. We want water cooler talk. Mm-hmm. We want elevator talk. We want people to say, did you hear what Andrew Hollister said on the radio? I couldn't freaking believe it. How does he get away with that kind of stuff? And so you constantly have to ratchet up the shock value, you know, notch by notch until one day you go over the line, just like Governor Headcase just did. And then it's, I'm shocked to learn the controversy has been going on this radio station. You're fired.
Yeah.
Happens over and over and over again.
Yeah, absolutely true. So before the break, we were talking about federal money potentially being able to be used to arm schools, $1 billion student support program, a part of the Every Student Success Act, is potentially being talked about to use to arm teachers at schools. And while this is a federal issue, it does impact New York State, so I'm welcome and open to talking about it. And, you know, throughout this race, something that people who desperately want to support the Republican ticket but struggle with it because of their choice for lieutenant governor, who just loves the SAFE Act, wants to go a step further in taking away our rights. She said she's been up clear from the beginning on her stance.
What?
That's what she said. Yep. We might even maybe later we could pull up the clip of specifically what she said. It's on YouTube. It was she was doing a debate just before being picked for lieutenant governor. So this is live on television. And she said, I will not try to eliminate the SAFE Act. I want common sense gun control, more bans on bump stocks, more background checks. She said she wanted universal background checks, which really speaks to how she doesn't know those already have, like, that we have those already.
A little thing called NICS.
Yep, NICS has been around for a very long time. So when people hear that, they find it really hard to support the Republican ticket at all. And then they look at Larry Sharp running on the Libertarian line and go, wow, these guys actually care about my rights. All of my rights, my Second Amendment rights, my rights to my property, my rights to my paycheck, you know, my rights and the court of law, like these guys really care. So then they kind of get stuck in this this debacle in this kind of like, well, I've always voted Republican. Should I vote Libertarian? And then they kind of came up with this thing to make them feel a little better. They go, well, you know, the lieutenant governor position is just cutting ribbons. The number of times I've heard that is really painful because it shows how people really don't know what the lieutenant governor does in New York State. So just a few things off the top of my head. Lieutenant governor is the president of the Senate, the mover and the shaker in there to get the bills passed. They serve as the acting governor when the governor is not around. They serve on the court for a trial of impeachments. They serve on the state defense council, and they're on a bunch of other boards and trusts throughout the state, you know, making things get done here in New York. So what has Cuomo's lieutenant governor done right now in response to this? She's pushing red flag laws as the answer. She doesn't want to see the option for teachers to be armed in schools or schools to have good protection. Instead, she wants the students and the teachers to be the new secret police for Governor Cuomo. And, you know, if your child draws a picture of what looks like a firearm on his homework or her homework or anything like that, then what you will get is, you know, a teacher who's going to err on the side of caution because they don't want to be liable or responsible. They're going to push that up and somebody's going to come kick down your door and take away your guns. So that's what's being pushed here in New York and as a response to potentially arming teachers in New York. So, you know, the way I approach this issue is a little different. So I mentioned I went to Wilson Magnet High School in the city where we literally every day went through airport scanners to get into the building. That was my life through high school. Metal detectors, wands, people searching your backpacks. That's what happened. Guess what? Kids still got weapons into school. It didn't matter. They still got weapons into school. Consistently, weapons were brought into school. Now, here's the thing, and we talk about this kind of often. If a shooter was to come to a school and you knew who was armed, the shooter is just going to shoot that person. Security guard, who's the first person that person's going to take out? The security guard. So what we need to do is we absolutely need to give people the option to have firearms in schools, teachers, administrators, the janitor, whomever, but nobody should know who they are. They should get the appropriate training, absolutely. They should qualify with their weapon, just like the police do. Nobody should know. It should always be concealed. Nobody should know. That way, when somebody thinks about shooting up a school, or doing anything, any type of attack to a school, they don't know who's armed, they don't know who isn't. That's an actual deterrent to school shootings. If you know who is out there, who is actually, you know, holding that weapon, who is going to protect people, they will just be the first target. If you look at something, and we call this a hard target, if you look at school and go, oh man, I could walk through the door and, you know, immediately you have no idea who the person is who's going to secure it, then you won't. You really got to think hard. And I think we just got Killian's stance on the SAFE Act pulled up here. I see it on the screen.
Yes, I think we do. And here we go. This is a Julie Killian answering the newscaster's question. She is the Republican candidate for lieutenant governor.
Ms. Killian, if you were presented with a chance to repeal the SAFE Act, would you do that if elected?
Absolutely not. I have been very clear about my position on common sense gun control from the very beginning.
Are there any parts of the SAFE Act you would vote to repeal?
No, I am not repealing the SAFE Act. I would not vote for it. I believe in common sense gun control. I believe we need universal background checks. We need to ban bump stocks. We need to raise the age to 21. I would pass the Extreme Risk Protection Order. And when I'm in the Senate, I am going to work with the Senate Republicans to get that done.
Well, I have to say, Julie Killian, that bump stocks are already illegal in New York and nobody cares anyway, because who uses a bump stock?
Yeah, just people who don't know how to shoot, I think. I don't know. And they're crazy expensive, too. So you've got to have a hefty wallet just to be able to afford one.
Well, and then you also have the technique that you can use. It's called your thumb and a belt loop. Because anybody who's reasonably practiced with firearms, in about 10 minutes of monumental waste of ammunition, you can simulate the action of a bump stock. All you're doing is using the recoil to, you know, bring the next round into the chamber. And if you know your weapon and you know the physics that are involved, you can do it. It's just a stupid non-issue.
Yeah, no, it really is. But what she said is, when she's in the Senate, right, and she was running for Senate at the time when she said this, before she switched over to lieutenant governor, that she would work with Senate Republicans to get those measures passed. Well, I got news for everybody.
And thanks, by the way, it says a lot about the Republican Senate, too.
Yes, yes, absolutely. But her being a lieutenant governor doesn't change that position. Then she's the president of the Senate. So if you support the Second Amendment, you can't look at the Republican ticket with anything more than just knowing that they're there ready to compromise your rights.
Can you say Kirsten Gillibrand? I mean, this is the kind of rhetoric we heard from Kirsten Gillibrand when she was running.
And a lot of people equate them. A lot of people mention that because Killian has supposedly, now this hasn't been public, but some people say, oh, no, no, she recanted what she said. Now she supports the Second Amendment.
What was it, 6 months ago?
That's barely. Yeah, I mean.
Did I say I love the SAFE Act? Oh, no, 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 no. No, I meant I hate the SAFE Act. Yeah. I don't know about you guys. I mix up love and hate all the time. I mean, they're both four-letter words. Oh. So what a ridiculous thing.
So people who are struggling with this have come up with another thing. They say, oh, you know, Mark Molinaro, who's the front runner on the Republican ticket, he's not the one who chose her. The establishment Republicans are, which Mark has actually come publicly and said, no, she was my personal choice.
And even if that were true, how would that fix things?
It would.
Does that mean, oh yeah, okay, I'll vote. That makes sense. I'll vote for somebody who's violently at odds with my values.
Yeah, yeah. It just doesn't make sense. So Mark Molinaro's latest piece on this is that he has spoken with her and that basically she's agreed not to say it anymore until after the election. So
no, you're making that up.
That's a paraphrase. I forget what his specific words were. I think his words were, she understands my position on this issue.
Wait a minute.
I think that's...
I actually have a quote right here on my phone from Mark Molinaro, and I'm going to let everybody out there in the audience break down into small discussion groups while we take another break here on Radio Free New York.
There you go.
All right, that's Andrew C. Hollister's voice you're hearing, and he is the, Ms. Killian's opponent for lieutenant governor, and he has much more to say here on the program on WISL.
This is Dom Jenna, the owner of Genesee Valley Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Avon, your no-nonsense car dealer. I checked out the online disclaimer on one of those dealer ads. You'd have to be in the military while owning a real estate office, have bought a Case farm tractor in the past 12 months while being a non-prime customer, a returning lessee, being disabled and needing the vehicle to be converted, while being a member of the Future Farmers of America, and just happen to have your present vehicle in an accident and declared a total loss by your insurance company. Really? All that? Or the price is no good? Listen, when we say we have a $279 36-month lease on a Ram Quad Cab 4x4, it's $279. And when we say we have factory employee pricing on all Jeep Cherokees and Renegades in stock, we actually do. Check us out online. It's our no-nonsense way. Our Labor Day event rebates end soon. Come see us. Genesee Valley. Exit 10, Route 390. At GenesseeValley.com.
Visit the largest living history museum in New York State. Spend the perfect day at Genesee Country Village and Museum. Explore the historic village as costumed interpreters bring stories to life. Visit the blacksmith, the potter, the tinsmith, and tour the working brewery. Churn butter in our kitchens and see the baby animals on the farm. Genesee Country Village and Museum is open Tuesday through Sunday, just 20 miles from downtown Rochester. Visit gcv.org.
You're listening to Radio Free New York
on the WYSL stations.
So, Andrew Hollister, I just happen to have here on my cell phone Mark Molinaro's phone number, his private cell number.
Oh.
And I'm not going to divulge how I got hold of that, but I texted him. This is back in May. Hi, Mark. Bob Savage, your owner of WYSL. Blah, 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 blah. Tell him about the station a little bit. I say, we're staunchly pro-Second Amendment. Sorry, can't support you with Julie Killian on the ticket. Please choose a real constitutionalist instead. And now, quoting from Mark Molinaro's response, his text back to me. You ready, folks? I've received several calls, and had someone called me, I would have let you know she adopts my position, and our position is defense of the Second Amendment. That has been and remains my position. So I answer, well, I'll have to hear that from Ms. Killian and on the record. Still hard to understand choosing her given her public support of the SAFE Act. Gun rights are under virulent attack everywhere, and we don't need an anti-gun fox in the hen house. And I said, oh, and I tried calling you, by the way.
Yeah.
FYI. And his response is, oh, she will. Yes.
How long ago was that?
That was May.
May. All right.
Still waiting for that call from Julie Killian.
Yep. And she has not publicly, to my knowledge, and our team is really good, so if she did go public about it, I would know. She hasn't publicly recanted. She hasn't. What she has done is quietly told people, oh, I support the Second Amendment. Yeah, I do. Nobody believes it.
If he doesn't get rid of her, he's dead.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere with that. And speaking of Second Amendment rights, you know, I actually had a chance to go to a fairly large, probably one of the biggest gun shows I got a chance to go to this year, a little bit further south in the state. I'm not going to say what show it is because of the person I'm going to talk about here. I want this person to be able to remain anonymous if they choose to. I was there at this gun show collecting signatures to get Larry and I on the ballot, and I'll give you guys a signature update here in a minute. But this story is really cool. So we're here, we're at the gun show, we're collecting signatures, and people are flocking to us. You know, people have heard about our campaign, they know where we stand, they're coming in here. We got hundreds of signatures that day. Well, we had one guy who walked by briskly and said, no, I'm a Molinaro supporter. And I genuinely wanted to know from this guy why, because he was the only one. So I flagged him. I'm like, whoa, wait. I have a question for you. And I said, this conversation can remain private if you want. And he said, no, it's fine. And I said, okay, I want to know. You said you support Molinaro. He says, yes, I do. And I said, okay, could you tell me? He said, yes, I do. I'm a conservative. I'm a Republican. I have conservative values. I'm supporting Mark. I said, okay, I can respect that. What of his conservative policies and Republican, you know, policies do you support? And he stopped for a second and he looked at me, and very honestly, he said, he doesn't have any. He doesn't have any, was his response. And I said, well, I don't really understand. And he said, I'm running for New York State Assembly as a Republican. And to be quite frank and honest with you, my support for him is strictly party lines. And I said, okay, I can see that. I said, but what do you want to get done in New York? And have you heard our position? And he said, no, to be honest, I just kind of been following whatever the Republican Party tells me to do. I haven't really looked at anything else.
Oh my God.
This is somebody running for office who, according to him, has a very good chance if a court case goes through, he might be running unopposed. So he is going to be elected more than likely. If not, it sounds like, based on their polling, he's got to win. So this guy could potentially be the next Republican assemblyman. And we started talking and he says, you know, I actually really like your guys' policies and this and that. Now, his wife was there, and the whole time she's nodding her head. Yes, everything we're talking about. Yes, yes. And so she's reaching and grabbing our literature, and she's really excited. She's totally won over. And he goes, you know what? I got to think about this. Can I come back? Sure. Not even a half an hour later, he comes back with his card, comes back with his literature, asks for more of ours, and says, you know what? If I get elected, I know I can work with you guys.
Excellent. I was hoping that was where the story was
going. Yes, yes.
Because at the beginning of the story, I was like, oh, no. Yeah. Tribal politics. No wonder we're in the jackpot we're in. And now you bring it around with a nice hopeful note. I'm glad to see that.
Yeah, yeah. So by the time he left, I didn't have a commitment to vote, but I had a commitment to vote. And this man was, you could tell he actually, in the beginning, had a personal struggle. When he responded in the beginning, I could tell just by the look in his eyes that he didn't want to say it, but he said he has none. He has no conservative Republican policies.
Thank the Lord, a Republican with some principles.
Yeah,
convictions.
And that really shows a lot of what Larry and I are doing across the state. We are really bringing hope to people. We are. And it inspires hope in me, too, as I'm going through this, to see that there are people who think, no, I'm voting this one way and only this way because that's how I've always done it, to stop and go, you know what, there could be something better. There is something better. I'm going to make a change this year. So that was just an amazing success story. I drove well over 3 hours to go to this event, and there's a lot of events I drive all across the state for. That one conversation just by itself made the drive worth it. It was awesome.
Tell us about this. I mean, you're running for lieutenant governor as a libertarian, and you don't have big party money behind you. You don't have all kinds of resources. You don't have kingmakers telling you what to say, where to go, all that kind of thing. Tell us what that's like running for high office in one of the biggest states in the country.
Yeah, yeah. So in the very beginning, it was daunting and terrifying. Absolutely. Especially you're going up against people who, you know, I worked with the Republican Party the last few years. I helped the Astorino campaign. So knowing that I would be facing the same people that I was working with before, that it was definitely like a struggle and a concern. But then I realized I can just do the right thing. And that just, you know, I don't have to be scripted. I'm never scripted. You know, I may have a few things that I'm going to talk about, but I don't read from a script. I don't have a teleprompter. And you're right. We don't have the big money. But what's really interesting in New York State especially, and you'll see this in other places across the country, people always talk about a few things. They talk about historical election numbers, and they'll talk about money when they talk about electability. Now, historic numbers are really kind of a moot point for the Libertarian Party because we've never really ran gubernatorial candidates. Like, yes, names were on the ballot. Signatures were collected. Those people weren't out doing town halls. They weren't out on the radio. They weren't out on television. They weren't out meeting with voters. They weren't out campaigning. They do a few things here or there, stop at the fair, but they never spent more than they never even raised more than $5,000 for the whole entire election and didn't even spend that either.
$5,000 is what they've raised? For gubernatorial candidates?
For the last two candidates before us, yes. So when people say...
Versus Andrew Cuomo's, what was it, $30 to $50 million?
Exactly.
Much of which came from us,
yes.
The taxpayers.
Yep. So people say, well, look at the last two elections. Libertarians never taken more than 1% of the vote. Yeah, they weren't doing this. They weren't running like we are. So that's the first piece. The second piece is the money, right? So if you look at statewide elections, there's some numbers that you can actually follow. If you're a Democrat, you are a Republican. If you are a Republican in New York State, you basically spend close to $6 per vote you earn. That's about what it comes out to being. If you are a Democrat, you spend almost double that. It's true. As a Republican, if you look at historically what, or not, as a Libertarian, if you look at historically what Libertarians spend to earn a vote, it's between 15 and 25 cents. So we are much, much more efficient with the way we spend and the way we earn votes. So we've raised over $250,000. Molinaro's got 1.1, Cuomo's got 30. If you actually look at the numbers and the way—
extrapolate it out.
Yeah, yeah. If you look at it that way and look at what we have to spend to get votes versus what they have to spend to get votes, you'll see we're closing ground really quickly. Our $250,000 goes way further than Molinaro's, and he hasn't even spent his money. He's holding on to it real tight, whereas we've actually spent just about everything we've raised, and we're seeing those benefits return in constantly. So, as far as what it's like, it's a lot of travel, but I get to meet voters one-on-one, face-to-face, day in, day out. At nights, it can be tiring. you start to lose your voice a little bit, but it's been amazing because I meet people in the community, just your everyday people, and it's really great.
You came out and you talked to the Gun Owners of America New York meeting at the Ely Fagan American Legion in Henrietta. And I have to say that you're just kind of like a natural public speaker. Now, is this a skill that you've developed on the stump here now that you're running for lieutenant governor?
So it's kind of funny. I'm actually totally terrified of public speaking.
You would never know it. I mean,
that's what people say.
Just having a conversation with the guys. It was very, very natural. You and I were on the same program.
Yep.
It's like a month ago or whatever.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, I'm one of those people that public speaking was never a strong point for me.
Fear of everyone, by the way. I mean, it's a national stat. Everybody is terrified of public speaking.
Yep. So it has gotten easier for sure, but my hands still get shaky before I go up. I start sweating, all of that. But I just speak from my heart, and I just, like I said, I'm not scripted, so it's not like I have to worry about getting the words wrong. I just talk about what I know is right. That makes it easier, but it is still nerve-wracking. Absolutely.
Now, you teased, before we went to the break, you teased about the signatures.
Oh,
you're going to have a signature update.
Yes. So we needed 15,000 signatures to get on the ballot. We submitted over 31, almost 32,000 signatures this week. So we are absolutely going to be on the ballot. So far, nobody's even filed an objection against us.
So when are the when does everybody give all these signatures the fisheye and start, this one's disqualified, that one's disqualified? Is that a process, or does that happen just automatically as the signatures come in?
So the way it works is, so we submit our filing earlier this week, all of those signatures. They have until 5 p.m. tonight to file what's called a general objection. Now, they could postmark it in the mail, and it might not get there till Monday. That's a possibility. But if they don't do that, that's said and done. If they file a general objection, the signatures basically become public, and then they can get copies of them and go through and try to invalidate as many signatures as they want. But with more than double, they have to prove that basically each page has more than 50% wrong. So it's, highly unlikely. We might still see it. Something I was told is that the Republicans were going to file an objection, but they were having a hard time finding a volunteer to do it because they're not going to do it themselves, right? They have to have somebody else do it so it doesn't look like they did it, because if it shows they did it, shows how weak they are, how they're really nervous about the campaign. So they have to have a volunteer do it. Whether or not that's going to happen, I don't know.
Is there any historical precedent for more than 50% of the signatures on a petition being invalidated? Has that ever happened?
Not that I'm aware of, but that's not really a stat.
That would almost presuppose it, widespread fraud in the obtaining of the petition signatures.
Yeah. So things that can invalidate a signature are things like if the address that you sign, that you put your signature on your address. If you put the address that you're not registered to vote at, say your mailing address is different than your voter address, that can invalidate a signature. If you're not registered to vote, don't live in New York State, those are ways. But really what they try to do is at the bottom, a witness has to sign that they saw those signatures. So if they can, they'll invalidate the witness, which then means the whole entire sheet of 10 signatures is invalidated. So I know we're leaving. Before we get off the air, I just want to mention tonight, Larry and I are going to be in Syracuse at the amphitheater. We've got a rally, 5:30. Hope you guys can make it.
See you there. Thanks for listening to Radio Free New York.